It's the Nahum Segal Network, and welcome to a fresh new edition of By the Book, brought to you by our friends at Koren Publishers. I remind you that all Koren and Magid books are now available at Jewish bookstores everywhere, including J. Levine at 5 West 30th Street between Broadway and 5th Avenues in New York City. There is a commuter's special that is in effect specifically for the Maseches Yoma in color, brought to you by our friends at Koren. Bring the Beit HaMikdash to life by studying Maseches Yoma in color. Order a subscription to the print edition of the Koren Talmud Bavli and get a free digital edition. The digital edition is compatible on all mobile devices, including iPod, tablet, iPad, and more. Package has a value of $60 for each volume. It's perfect for your commute to work. So go to korenpub.com. Use promo code JM in the AM at checkout. korenpub.com, korenpub.com, for more information. Well, our guest this week is the author of The Blessing of a Broken Heart. The Blessing of a Broken Heart is a hauntingly beautiful memoir by American immigrant to Israel, Sherry Mandel. The Blessing of a Broken Heart accompanies the reader through her through Sherry's first year of mourning for her 13-year-old son, Kobe, brutally murdered by terrorists near his home in Tekoa in 2001. Kobe was found stoned to death along with a friend while he played hooky from school one day. This profoundly moving prose poem laces together Jewish tradition, memory, love, and faith as the writer mother recounts her transformation from shock to grief and compassion. Singular in its honesty and depth of emotion will leave you forever changed. It's winner of the National Jewish Book Award, The Blessing of a Broken Heart. Sherry Mandel, welcome to the Nahum Segal Network.
Thank you.
It has been a while since we've spoken. In fact, I've had your husband, Rabbi Seth, on a couple of times over the last few years as we spoke about the Kobe Mandel Foundation and Camp Kobe, and there is a lot to talk about, of course. How soon after the horrific episode, the murder of your son in May of 2001, did this book come out?
Oh, I think it came out about in 2003, but I started writing it a few months after Kobe was killed, because I didn't know what to do with myself.
And the writing was helpful in what way?
Well, first of all, during the Shiva, people were telling us stories about Kobe, and I felt that I just had to write about Kobe's life. And then during the year, as I was writing the book, more and more things kept happening, sort of spiritual incidents and events.
You know, you received an MA in creative writing and taught writing at the University of Maryland and at Penn State before you moved to Israel. Did you somehow feel that because it was so much in your professional blood, you had no choice but to write about this life-changing episode?
Well, that's how I make sense of everything. My whole life has been through writing, so I felt that I had to tell the stories that were happening, and that also writing would be a way for me to pour out my pain. And really, I didn't realize how it would transform the pain, but it was all I could do was cry and write.
Sherry Mandel is with us. The book is called The Blessing of a Broken Heart. If we go back to that time in the middle of 2001, in general, the state of Israel, the citizens and residents of Israel were going through a very challenging time. The murder of your son and his friend on that day was certainly around the world, I guess what we would call one of the most looked at and paid attention to terrorist episodes. But as we know, there were many. Because it was part of such a brutal, murderous campaign against Jewish people in Israel, how different was it than if it would have been, I don't know, what some would call an isolated incident?
Well, the difference was that it wasn't just our family that was struck by terror. And Kobe, and he was killed with Yosef Ishran. I think they were number 67 and 68 during the Intifada, and over 1,200 people were killed. So I saw the help that I had been given during the Shiva and the way my friends helped me. So I was able to go and help other people. And also that's how we ended up establishing the women's programs of the Kobe Mandel Foundation, which is still running till this day. And now it's not just for terror victims or survivors of terror. It's also for bereaved families from other tragedies.
Yeah, I just got back from Israel, and people were telling me about a specific event that were run recently for the foundation. How soon after Shiva were you able to jump into that role of actually offering comfort and just a shoulder to cry on for other families who are going through terrible grief?
Well, Kobe was killed in May, and I would say maybe 6 to 9 months later. But first, I just had to kind of cocoon myself in my home with my family, and I really felt like I couldn't function. I couldn't do anything. I was just totally torn apart, and I was in chaos. I was in so much pain, and seeing my family and my husband and just missing Kobe and seeing his friends, that there was nothing I could do. But I got a lot of help from friends here who were also grief counselors.
Sherry Mandel is our guest. I assume that during that period of time, there were a lot of people, friends and relatives, who were very concerned about you. Was there ever a concern that this state that you were in could just linger and linger and not end?
Well, I think at first my husband was like a little afraid when he saw how I reacted when I found out. But no, I think that what happens is, for a lot of bereaved people, especially when you're struck with a terrible tragedy, that you do fall apart, and that's okay, and that in a way you should fall apart, because you have to touch that depth of pain in order to rise from it. And the problem is that if you don't have people around you who can help you bear the pain, they don't allow you to go there. And so in a way, you're always stuck because you never went to the depth of the pain. You can never rise from it. But it's like a seed. Once you've been torn apart and destroyed, then you can grow again.
So it's necessary to get to that lowest point. It's the only way to rebound.
I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but I think for a lot of people, that if you have enough support and you can touch like the bottom, like going to the bottom of a pool, and then you can propel yourself up. But otherwise, you're just always swimming in murky water.
Not to put words in your mouth, but people in situations of grief, even many years later, always talk about how a day doesn't go by without thoughts of that day, of that period of time, certainly of your dear son. What's it like today? Now, this happened in 2001. It's now almost 2014. What are the daily thoughts that happen now as opposed to the more acute ones that may have been right after the tragic episode?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't say an ordinary life, but we have an expanded life. And I always think about Kobe. But Kobe has also led us to places that we would never have ventured to without him. And so I really feel lots of times, like we call them Kobe moments, where something really unusual happens and we just feel that his soul is somehow connected to us. And I was recently reading about the soul, and it said that there's, after death, there can be a connection to the soul that's called the uber, like a baby, like an infant, an embryo. That's how you translate it. And that something grows from it. There's a kind of birth. And that the soul somehow pushes you toward like greater heights. And I feel that's what Kobe has done. So even though he's been down a long time, I mean, it'll be 13 years in May, he's still with us, but also not a day doesn't go by that I don't miss him and wish he were here.
How old is your youngest child today?
18, almost 19.
And there's no question, because of the timing of of his murder, that he's always associated with Lag BaOmer. Anybody familiar with the story knows that. So what is that time of year like, I don't know, a few years after he was gone, and what's it like now?
Well, first of all, we have a hike now for the foundation. We do a 5-day fundraising hike, and it usually starts on Mount Baomer. So we're usually on the Israel Trail or getting ready to go. So it's like an exciting time of year for us. And before this, we did a hike in Tekoa through the wadi where Kobe was killed. So we really try to turn everything into something positive or life-affirming or life-building, and not just for us, but also for, you know, we take care of 400 kids at Camp Colby during the summer. And a lot of the things we do are to raise money for the foundation. So we're also helping other people with these events that are just like great fun for us as well. We also have comedy for Colby. We have another fundraiser where comedians from L.A. and with Avi Lieberman, they come here. We just finished it. And we have a week of comedy in 6 different cities. So now we're associated with comedy. In fact, somebody at the airport came up to us and said, "Oh, hi, aren't you the Mandels?" And we said, "Yeah." And they said, "Oh, you bring us such great comedy." So it's amazing. It's amazing that somehow our lives have been transformed. So for a lot of people, we're not just a symbol of suffering anymore.
That was the event that I was referring to when I was in Israel. People were talking about how amazing that comedy night was. And and as you hear, it's not just the people I hear from, but you yourself get feedback that people appreciate very much. Sherry Mandel is with us via telephone. We are speaking on By the Book, brought to you by our friends at Koren Publishers. The book is entitled The Blessing of a Broken Heart. It's a TobyPress.com release. You can go to TobyPress.com for information. The book is... it takes us back to the period of time when Colby Mandel in May of 2001 was brutally murdered, and how his mother dealt with the days, weeks, months, and even years to an extent afterward. Sherry, I've sat Shiva a couple of times, but I guess under what people would call more conventional circumstances. I don't even know if in that area of life there is such a thing as conventional circumstance, but I'm getting to a point. People asked me after Shiva if anything that was said to me during that time, during that week, was in fact comforting. And I've had unique approaches to that question. I ask you, in the aftermath of the brutal murder of Colby and obviously being thrust into, you know, the international spotlight with what happened right afterwards, was there in fact anything said to you during that week that you remember being particularly comforting?
Yes, I remember that, first of all, there was a rabbi that my husband was friendly with, and he had lost a child. And he came to the Shiva, and Seth said to him, "What do we do? What do we do?" And he said, "You have to use the pain to grow." And then there was another woman, and she told me about her mother was a Holocaust survivor, and then she moved to Israel, and her son was killed in a war. And so this woman was his sister. And she looked at me and she said, "My mother has had a lot of pain in her life, but she's had a lot of blessings, and you will too."
Wow. Pretty amazing. Sherry Mandel is with us, The Blessing of a Broken Heart. I mentioned a moment ago how you were thrust into the international spotlight, so to speak. The fact that, that this happened to an American family in Israel definitely lent a different, I don't know, how would you call it, a different angle to the story? How would you say the fact that it wasn't quote-unquote regular Israelis, what kind of impact that had on the entire episode's aftermath?
Well, I think there were, for some people, they couldn't ignore the fact that Colby was just a 13-year-old boy wearing a Yankees cap, photographed in front of the Empire State Building, that he was, in a lot of ways, a normal American. And, you know, and he happened to be Israeli as well. But, you know, hopefully some people couldn't turn their back on the fact that it was brutal murder.
I know that obviously the Israeli government, Israeli press, Israeli citizens react in a certain way. We saw it, unfortunately, too many times during that a period in Israel's history. But what about the reaction from the U.S., the American Jewish community, I don't know, American government? I mean, was it unique in that way because of Colby's background and his roots?
Well, the American people, especially the American Jewish community and in the five towns, Englewood and, you know, other areas as well, like Birmingham, Alabama and Texas, Houston, Texas and L.A., a lot of people reached out to us. And we got thousands of cards also from Silver Spring, Maryland. And in fact, there was a bill that was introduced by Sarah Stern and ZOA in the American Congress to change the prosecution of terrorists, of like Americans who were killed abroad by terrorists. It used to be that the State Department was in charge, and eventually a law was passed that now the Department of Justice was in charge. But the office really hasn't been as positive as we had hoped.
Wow. Earlier, I asked you about the age of your youngest child. Today, you said 18, and one of the things we obviously could not discuss way back then, in when you had first written the book, was some of the things that Kobe's siblings have now encountered, you know, through their young adult lives. One can only imagine as a parent what one goes through in this type of situation, whether it's feelings of guilt, anger, and all the other emotions that come into situations like this. How do these siblings deal with it? And are there guilt feelings and other type of, negative reactions that haunt them to this day?
Well, that's partially why we started the camp. In fact, I would say that's why we started the camp, because parents are taken care of. I mean, at least they can talk to their friends, or they want to go to a psychologist. But with kids, most kids don't want to go get any help, and it's hard to find help. So at Camp Kobe, they see other kids like them who are going through the same type of feelings, and they have art therapy or drama therapy, and they're in touch with their counselors during the year. So it's their process is supported, but it's hard. It's because, you know, a child in a lot of ways ceases being a child the day his brother is murdered or her brother is murdered.
Ceases being?
A child.
A child.
It's like their childhood is over in a lot of ways, because they've seen so much evil and so much pain that they know the world in a way. And the problem is a lot of them can't bear it, or the parents turn away. It's very hard to be available emotionally to your kids when you're suffering.
And
But we tried to.
Yeah. And with the whole world paying careful attention to you and all the other things that came along with this episode. So, Camp Kobe, obviously, and the foundation have been helpful, I guess, in keeping them, as you say, focused on the positive aspects of all this and the different things that their background can help in terms of, other people who are in this type of situation. But what do they remember about those early days? I mean, was your household how do I put this? I don't want to say unusual, but it must have been a very different atmosphere for the weeks and months subsequent to Kobe being taken from you.
Yeah, we were broken. We were totally broken.
Was there a daily routine? Was there a daily routine with the siblings in school? Were they involved in regular activities?
Yeah, they kept going, thank God. But a lot of families, they don't. A lot of families, the kids stop going to school, and they drop out. And a lot of people, they turn to drugs. But I think because we had support, like my friend who was a grief counselor would come over every day, and she also would talk to the kids. So all of our feelings were out. Nothing was hidden. And, in fact, this story is in the book, that I was downtown with Daniel one day and I was crying. He was then 12 and I felt so bad about crying. And then I looked at my watch and I said to him, you know what, Daniel, just give me 1 minute to cry and you time me. And so he timed me, and it was like 32 seconds. And then after that, when I would cry, I would give the kids my watch and I would say, just time me, give me 1 minute. And so the crying was part of it, but it didn't ruin everything. It didn't overwhelm everything. It was like part of a rhythm, part of a cycle. And eventually they stopped like paying attention to me when I cried, because it was part of life, that it didn't destroy the happiness.
Yeah, but it sounds like in order for them to continue with great strength, they needed parents with great strength. And it seems that you were able to maintain a collected... a cool, calm, and collected approach to everything, even in the depths of grief.
Oh, it sounds that way. I'm sure it wasn't always like that, especially in the beginning. No, it was because also I had a grief counselor who was one of my best friends. So I sort of had a guide, and she told me it was okay to cry in front of the kids. So I didn't have to hide it, and I could cry, but they saw that you weren't destroyed by deep feeling. And I feel like that's a really important message, that you can face the worst as a family and still survive. And not only survive, but, like, I hate to use the word flourish, but we have, please God.
Do you hear from Kobe's classmates still today?
Well, I see them. Some of them live in Tacoa, and they're getting married and having children. But it's affected them. It definitely affected them. It changed them.
That whole generation in Israel, you could argue, are affected in so many different ways, right?
Well, we're just much closer. So many of these kids have been to so many funerals that it's, you know, as an American, I feel like it's so abnormal the way death invades us here.
I remember meeting somebody who lost, I don't know, two or three classmates in the 1982 Lebanese War, and spoke about how that affected him, and obviously he was already older than a teenager, and, well, not necessarily, but in his case he was, and it's such a life-changing experience. Sherry Mandel is with us. The Blessing of a Broken Heart is a Toby Press release. Go to tobypress.com. I want to thank our friends at Koren Publishers, bringing you this segment every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, and during its encore presentations. All Koren and Magid books are available at Jewish bookstores everywhere, including Jay Levine at 5 West 30th Street between Broadway and 5th Avenues in Manhattan. Don't forget, you can bring the Beit HaMikdash to life by studying Maseches Yoma in color. Order a subscription to the print edition of the Koren Talmud Bavli and get your free digital edition. The digital is compatible on all mobile devices, including iPod, tablet, iPad, and more. Package has a $60 value for each volume. It's perfect for your commute to work. You can go to korenpub.com. We encourage you to use the promo code JM and the AM at checkout for all the specials. Again, go to korenpub.com. The Blessing of a Broken Heart, a hauntingly beautiful memoir by American immigrant Israel Sherry Mandel. Sherry was born in New York, graduated from Cornell and Colorado State University with an MA in creative writing, taught writing at University of Maryland and Penn State before moving to Israel in 1996. Author of Writers of the Holocaust, and has written for numerous magazines and journals, including the Washington Post, Denver Post, and the Jerusalem Post. Director of the Kobe Mandel Foundation, which aims to create a Jewish response to the impact of terror and tragedy, helping bereaved mothers, fathers, widows, orphans, and siblings rebuild their lives and create meaning out of suffering. Did anybody recommend that you move out of Tacoa after all this?
We thought of it, but we would have moved to Jerusalem or some other part of Israel, and we felt like we needed to be in our community. In fact, experts tell you not to leave, not to move right away after a death, to stay a year. So we decided for our kids we had to stay.
Well, now I'm going to sound like a real American. You know, Tacoa's in a during tough times with the neighbors, Tacoa's could be a rough neighborhood, right? Let's put it that way. Was it more difficult for Kobe's siblings to grow up and, you know, just thinking of the horror that could be next door? Obviously, you know, it was experienced by their brother.
God forbid. But, you know, I feel like we're just talking about Israel is so dangerous and terrible. And I just want to stress that, like, for my kids, even after the horrible murder, that my kids had a great life growing up in Israel, that they have so much independence and so much life and so much Judaism here that I feel that it's built them in so many ways. So I just want to stress that. And then I also want to say that the book was also made into a play that I want to thank Todd Salovey at the University of California in San Diego, because he took the book and made it into a play. And I hope that other communities want to put the play on. They can be in touch with us through email.
On your first point, well, I'm glad I asked the question just to get that response from you, because, of course, I wholeheartedly trumpet what you said. I was just curious if there was any notion of moving out. And in terms of the play, how long after the book was written was it turned into a play?
I think it was about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, so probably about 8 years.
And was it presented afterwards? Was it presented under the same name, The Blessing of a Broken Heart?
Yeah, it's The Blessing of a Broken Heart, and it was shown at the San Diego Repertory Theater for 2 weeks to a non-Jewish audience.
What was it like for you meeting people who suffered you know, murders of their own family members after Kobe was gone. You know, it would seem like, and again, you know, life's all about experiences. So a regular person reacts in a certain way or doesn't even know how to react when they walk into a home of somebody like that. You're unfortunately now an expert at this. So you walk in, what's it like? I mean, is it, do people feel like, oh, you know, here's somebody that finally understands what I'm going through, or do they feel like I can't, you know, I should be careful not to complain? Look what happened to the Mandels. Like, what's the reaction?
Well, first of all, I want to say I also trained as a pastoral counselor after Kobe was killed. So in pastoral counseling and in grief counseling, we really learn the strength of presence. And sometimes you just don't have to say anything. It's just your presence. If people who have suffered a loss see that you're still alive and thriving, they get the message. So sometimes it's best just not to say anything and let the other person take the lead.
But is there a feeling like, are they aware of the fact that you've gone through what you have when you walk in, or is that not necessarily so?
No, usually somebody will tell them or I'll tell them. And yeah, I mean, a lot of times people would say mine is bad, but not as bad as yours, which never made me feel very good. But I guess in that way, I was also a comfort to people.
It's amazing how people have the, and I guess human beings all do this, have a tendency to think of better or worse, or to give gradings to the, you know, different types of suffering. You know, people ask about, you know, those who are ill, who are suffering, you know, which is worse to have. And I think the answer always is they're both bad. It's as simple as that.
Right. It's not really a competition.
Right. Aside from Lag BaOmer, which we just mentioned, every Jewish holiday brings its own pain, or is there any one in particular on the calendar that is, because you write about different holidays, Hanukkah, Purim, etc. Are there those that have an even extra significance when thinking back on Kobe?
Well, of course, I mean, in the first years, that empty chair, like, every holiday was hell. Purim,
right.
You know, starting with the month of Adar when you're supposed to be happy, and Purim, and then Pesach, where Kobe, you know, he loved questions, and he loved talking Torah, and every holiday was hell. But eventually, you get used to it. You know, we adjust, and we don't have the expectations of wholeness that we used to have. So I don't think that we suffer, please God, the way we used to, because we're just, it's, somebody said it's a new normal, but I don't think it's a, you know, in some ways it's a new normal, but in other ways it's like a new extraordinary. And so you have to become greater in order to bear this. That's what people, I think, don't understand. That we felt like we had to change our life to be much wider and bigger. And in fact, that's how I define resilience. And Corn Press, they accepted another book of mine about resilience that will be out in a year. So that's what I'm really thinking and writing about now and talking about now is resilience and how you, I don't want to use the word endure because it's greater than endurance. It's how you enlarge yourself and elevate yourself and your family.
Yeah, I understand. It's just, I'm sure you understand, you know, why someone like myself or anybody on the other end would hesitate when they hear this, because is it possible to set aside or to, you know, the pain of the past, or to utilize the pain of the past to actually grow to the extent that you're suggesting, and to actually endure the way you're encouraging people to go ahead and endure? It just seems like your situation is exceptional. And I'm not talking about its degree of greatness. I'm talking about it being an exception. And I'm wondering how many people can, you know, muster up the energy and utilize all that pain to just package it together and just, you know, spread their wings even further.
Well, first of all, also now I run groups, like spiritual support groups that are funded through the New York Federation. And we see with the women we work with that so many of them found this kind of like spiritual greatness. And it's not necessarily expressed in, you know, great activities, but it's a kind of attitude about, like I'd say, about God, really, and suffering, that they won't let it destroy them. And they want to believe, most of them do believe that God is still good. And life is still good.
Yeah. Spoke about the calendar a few minutes ago. How important is that first Yahrzeit, that first anniversary of Kobe's death? Is it a very significant one as a hurdle to overcome, or the next day is just as painful as the day before?
I think it depends. Like, I work with a lot of women now. Some of them say that, you know, nothing changed, it didn't get better. But I felt like the first Yahrzeit was very significant for us. And part of it was because I write about this in the book, that our community went for a hike in the canyon.
Right.
And we went to the cave where Kobe was killed, and I hadn't been there. And I was with Yosef's mother, and I thought, I don't want to see it. I don't want to go there. And then all of a sudden we were there, and it's a big cave. You can walk right in. And I walked in, and 400 candles had been lit there by all the people who were on the hike. And then I turned to my husband and I said to him, I can't believe it. This place is beautiful now. And he looked at me and he said, yeah, it's now a place of Kedusha, of holiness, because we've taken a place of cruelty and really like lit candles there and found some beauty there in what could have been just a place of pain.
The Kobe's friends' parents also became high profile, or they had a much different experience after this terrible tragedy?
I think their experience was different, but they have a large family here, so they got a lot of support from their family, and we're still close. I called Rena yesterday, so I speak to her a lot, and we try to be there for each other.
Was it unusual that Kobe's brother actually helped design Kobe's gravestone?
Well, given the fact he was only 12 years old, I think it was very unusual. But Daniel, now he's in art school. So he's 23 now. No, 24, and he's in art school. So he was an artist, and that's how he felt he wanted to express himself. And so in a way, it was really an expression for him of how much he missed his brother and how much he loved his brother.
Where is Kobe buried?
He's buried in Kfar Zion, which is about 15 minutes from us. But what was difficult, my son went to high school also in Kfar Zion, so he went to school right near his brother's grave.
I don't know if this is out of line to ask you, but my insatiable curiosity leads me to this question. You could always tell me it's none of my business. How would you describe the effect and the aftermath on your own marriage after what happened? I don't know if there's a tendency to blame, to assume, I don't know. I have no, thank God I can't relate to all this. Was there anything positive that allowed your marriage to grow through all of this?
Well, first of all, it's different for every couple, I think. But with Seth and I, there was just a closeness because we both knew that nobody else could understand what we'd been through the way that we did. And we needed each other. But I think what helped us was, like, Seth went into action right away. 5 weeks later, he was invited to America to speak at a rally, and he went. And I think that if I hadn't had the support of the community, it would have been very rough for me, and I think I might have resented him. But a 16-year-old girl moved into the house with us while he was away, and, you know, people were around me and taking care of us, and so we weren't alone. That's the thing with this kind of pain. When you're isolated in it, it's too much to bear. So we just had tremendous support, and Tacoma, where we live, it's just a community that is very supportive. We just went through we had a terrible snowstorm here in the past few days.
I was there. I was trapped in my hotel for the last 4 days.
So, well, we didn't have electricity for 2 days. But, you know, everybody knew that they could go to the people who had gas heat. And so, like, people really joined together.
How many families are in Tacoma?
Well, when we came here, there were 200 families, and now I think there's about 700.
And we're speaking on what is Monday evening in Israel. For those of you wondering, it's you're listening on a Tuesday morning. here at the Nahum Segal Network, but we are speaking when it's Monday night. Now, I was there through Sunday night and can report with an eyewitness account. How was Monday? Are a lot more people digging out from the storm now?
Well, Jerusalem, I think, was still closed down pretty much. The schools were still closed. But hopefully tomorrow, I think they're going to try to open the schools.
And, Sherry, can you understand that every Israeli driver I saw over the last few days, I was trying to beg them to let me get into their car for 5 seconds and show them how to get out of snow?
Yeah, it's not something they learn.
That's for sure. I'm telling you, a few seconds on each one, I could have given my expertise. I want to spend a few minutes on the foundation and Camp Kobe before we wrap things up. We're listening, or I should say you're listening to Buy the Book. It's our friends at Koren Publishers who bring you an intriguing conversation every single week with a great author, Sherry Mandel, who's actually working, as you heard, on a brand new book, and hopefully she'll join us at that point when it's released. She, of course, is author of The Blessing of a Broken Heart, which takes you through this horrifying experience of the a brutal murder of her 13-year-old son, Kobe, back in May of 2001. I remind you that we are brought to you by Koren and Magid Books, and they're available at Jewish bookstores everywhere, including J. Levine on West 30th Street between Broadway and Fifth Avenues in New York City. I believe there are some organizations and some efforts that were an outgrowth of that intifada, that were extremely strong toward the beginning, and as time went on, you barely heard from them regarding their work years later. Yours seems to be just plowing along and growing as time goes by. Is that a correct perception?
Well, because we take care of families who have been struck by terror and other tragedies, so we work with a wider population than some of the other organizations do. And also we have Camp Kobe, where we have American kids who work at the camp during the summer. So we have a wide reach. We have a group, it's called the Cry of the Mothers, that we're also working against the prison, the release of terrorists from prison.
You were outspoken about the most recent release?
I don't know if I was outspoken, but I'm definitely against it. And I see what it's done to our mothers. We have mothers whose kids' murderers were released, and a lot of them are just broken. You know, they can't even be part of our group because they're in too much pain. They can't discuss it. They can't talk about it.
Wow. Where is Camp Kobe?
Oh, so we rent out a kibbutz. For the past few years, we've been Kibbutz Yachiyam, which is near Nahariya, which actually looks like a camp because it's got a beautiful campus and, you know, it's a beautiful location.
And it goes for how many weeks?
Well, we have 8-day sessions, and we have 3 8-day sessions. So we have a boys' camp, a girls' camp, and a mixed camp. And then we also have, you know, every age. We have kids from 8 to 18, bereaved children.
Do the American staff members blend in, or do they have trouble relating to families and kids who are going through these situations?
Well, what happens is, of course, we train them, and of course at first it's hard, and we usually give them the younger kids. So it's easier for them to communicate with, like, the 8 to 10-year-olds. And what happens is that they start being able to communicate with their kids and understand their kids, and they learn a lot from these kids. They get a different sense of perspective, and they really enjoy their time with the kids. But what we have seen is that the Israeli kids also really appreciate the American kids, and they're in touch for years on Facebook, and when the American kids come to visit, and when they do their post-high school year. So, you know, whenever we meet an American kid who's been a counselor, they tell us how these relationships continue. So it also is a way of enlarging these children because they know that somebody cares about them who's not even in Israel.
Is there still, I'm making an assumption here, is there still great American support, financial support for the camp and the foundation?
Oh, well, there is a lot of support. We could always use more. And if anybody wants to contribute to our cause, we, you know, I hope our website is kobymandel.org, KobyMandell.org.
KobyMandel.org gets you information about the foundation, about Camp Kobe as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I assume you have Israeli staff members as well, not just those coming from the United States.
No, yeah, we have a lot of Israeli staff members, but most of our Israeli staff members also speak English, so they can also help the American kids who come and work at the camp. And it's been a really nice combination. It works very well.
Do you see, I mean, I know it's hard to quantify it, but you must see a real difference in siblings, families, when they go through all these experiences. I mean, you're a grief counselor at this point. You're, you know, you've taken your pastoral training very seriously. So a guy like me may not be able to notice it, but I'm sure you can see subtle differences to acute differences in people as they go through this experience.
You mean the experience of Camp Kobe?
Yeah, the camp, and just in general when they're...
Oh, yeah. No, we see with the mothers' groups. I can, you know, we do a retreat and at the end of the year, and we invite a lot of bereaved mothers, and we can see the people who have been part of our groups, because the women are just transformed. They're able, because when you have a place for the pain, then you have also a place for the happiness. And what, like, sort of outsiders don't understand is that your happiness also has to become greater to balance all the pain. So, like, where the kids also at the camp, they're capable of, like, great joy.
Unbelievable. One would think that there's no way they'd be able to garner up some great joy after what they've been through, but I guess that's what life's all about. Finally, Sherry Mandel, what's the perspective on the one above? A lot of people tend to be very angry at the creator of this world when they go through a situation like this, when the most precious thing that they have is taken from them, and especially in the manner that it happened in your situation. Is it a very long process to come to grips with the fate of your son and, in turn, of your family?
I mean, having a relationship with God, it's not an easy thing, and it's bumpy, but I feel like God really, that's what the book is about, The Blessing of a Broken Heart. It's about all the signs and wonders and, I guess I could even say, kindness that God did for us in the face of this terrible tragedy. So that, in a way, I feel like God sort of showed me faith, you know, or created this faith in me, rather than me just, you know, being angry. Or I felt like the only place we could turn really was to God and to Torah and to prayer, because they were the only vessel or vehicle that was large enough in a way. So, but it's not like you just have faith and that's it. It's a struggle. I think it's a struggle for everybody, but I feel that it's also a language, and that's another thing people don't understand, that after tragedy, your language changes in a way. You know, even like recently, I was at a class and the women started in the beginning complaining about their water bills, you know, like, and going on and on about their water bills, and not that I'm not upset about the water bill, but that's not what I want to talk about. That's not what I want to hear. You need language that is more spiritual or more that has to do with meaning.
Also sounds like you were surrounded by a good group of people. People who essentially were positive, people who had, you know, the patience and the love to convey to you and your family. And it sounds like you were surrounded by some really good people. And I don't know, maybe those who had a negative attitude either knew to stay out of the picture, or you essentially gave them the message that you weren't interested in that whole attitude.
No, I think that I was just surrounded by people with a great capacity to contain pain and to sustain us and to be with us for a long time. I mean, we live like 15 minutes from Efrat. A group of women from Efrat, they sent us Shabbos meals for months. I had friends who like cleaned my house and did the laundry and who came and spoke to us, and people who were just there for years and years and years.
Amazing. The blessing of being surrounded by great people, huh?
Yeah, I would say that that's really what created our ability to give in the face of tragedy.
It's called The Blessing of a Broken Heart. If you've never picked this up, I highly recommend it. It is an amazing book. Sherry Mandel, the author. You're always so inspiring. You and your husband, always so inspiring, so encouraging, so positive. What more could I say? It's obvious that you are having a tremendous effect on a lot of people all around the world, and what you've been able to bring to our world in the aftermath of this terrible tragedy after all these years is simply remarkable. I thank you so much for joining us today and for being part of this show.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Sherry. Sherry Mandel, The Blessing of a Broken Heart. Check it out, everybody. National Jewish Book Awardee. A Toby Press release. You can go to tobypress.com. Information about the Camp Kobe and the Kobe Mandel Foundation, you can find that online. And you can get information about the incredible work that they are doing. KobyMandel.org. 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 I want to thank our friends at Koren and Magid Books and remind you that all Koren and Magid titles are available at your local Jewish bookstores, including Jay Levine on 5 West 30th Street between Broadway and 5th Avenues in Manhattan. They have a commuter special now where you could bring the Beit HaMikdash to life by studying Maseches Yoma in color. Order a subscription to the print edition of the Koren Talmud Bavli. Get a free digital edition. The digital is compatible on all mobile devices, including iPod, tablet, iPad, and more. Has a value of $60 per volume, and it's perfect for your commute to work. Go to korenpub.com, KorenPub.com. Use the promo code JM in the AM at checkout to take advantage of all these incredible offers. Again, that's JM in the AM at checkout when you go to the website, korenpub.com, KorenPub.com. As you heard, Sherry Mandel is working with with Koren Publishers on another book that will be released at some point, and we hope to be able to speak to her again. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I get the opportunity to speak with a fantastic and really incredible author. And in this case, I want to thank Sherry Mandel. A reminder, you can go to the website, KobyMandel.org, KobyMandel.org, for information in the U.S., for information in general about the Kobe Mandel Foundation. And for information specifically in the United States, is a toll-free number, 888-622-5629. Again, that's 888-622-5629 for all the information. I thank everybody for tuning in to both the first run and encore presentations of By the Book. Thank you to Koren Publishers, KorenPub.com, KorenPub.com. Check out the book entitled The Blessing of a Broken Heart. Sherry Mandel is the author. KobyMandel.org with information about the Kobe Mandel Foundation, Camp Kobe, etc. You've been listening to Buy the Book. This is the Nachum Segal Network. Mm-hmm.